for me, like, it's so liberating to be weird. I honestly don't give a shit if you don't like me, if you don't like who I am, if you don't like the way I live my life. Like, cool, whatever. I'm still going to do it because it makes me happy and it makes me feel free. It makes me, I don't know, man. Like, it makes me feel fuller in myself. So...
Ladies and gentlemen, and anyone else who is here, my name is Dom Lamore, and this is the Black Man Talking Emotions Podcast. Too many men I know experience shame because society places pressure on them to withhold emotion. Emotion and sensitivity is weak. I found the opposite is true. Emotion and sensitivity is what makes us strong. So I'm going to pour this glass of the good stuff that you got me. This is a bottle that you bought.
Yeah.
Good scotch.
Let's go.
Cheers to you.
Cheers to you, man.
I appreciate you giving me some time tonight. I understand that it's always, you know, crazy. Everybody's busy, but you're much loved, and I'm really excited. You are the first interview I'm doing.
Oh, shit.
For this, I've written up about 12 episodes. You're the first one I'm actually getting to talk to me.
I'm the maiden voyage?
Well,
no pressure.
It only makes sense. It only makes sense.
Okay.
Cheers to you.
Cheers.
I didn't write too many questions for this section, okay? I truly wanted to talk on this subject. Society is very weird towards males emotionally and still to this day in 2022, especially in the Black community. You have to be tough. You have to be the man of the house.
Mm-hmm.
I've always felt that was what was projected on me. Just the other day, I saw a post about a girl who wants her child to be a real man. And I was so pumped to talk to you about this. I saw this post and she was like, I want a real man. And when he grows up, he ain't going to be a pussy. And like, she said all of this in the post.
Ooh.
It was so weird. I wanted to get your initial, how do you feel when you hear stuff like that from certain people who believe they know what a real man should be? And they try to project that on their children. Like, what does that make you feel like when you hear that?
It makes me feel a little disappointed, honestly. Like, our concept of masculinity and what it means to be a man is like constantly changing. But I feel like this you got to be a strong man. You got to be a tough man. You got to this machismo, you know, almost toxic. I don't think that in itself is a toxic masculinity thought. But it's this idea that like, You have to kill your emotions and be this cold, strong man. That's toxic. I feel like strength is a valuable skill to have and a valuable thing to like strive for. But I feel like making that the sole and only purpose in a man's life is not a good mindset to have, and it's just not healthy, honestly. It's not conducive to growth within our world, within my own self-exploration over the past few years. It's like, it's a very Western and like imperialist, this conqueror sort of mentality. Like it's not healthy.
Yeah, not healthy. We grow up with these stereotypes and these traditions that, you know, our parents and our grandparents lived by. And I went through it, so you can. I'm all right. I went through it. I made it out and I'm fine. And they create this illusion that they did it, so you have to do it because that's the only way that it can be done. And it is, like you said, very unhealthy. It's sickening. It's weird.
Yeah.
Parents, a lot of our uncles, cousins, people who are trapped in their boxes, that's really it. They need to see someone about it because they're unhealthy.
Let's just talk about like what our idea of masculinity is. You know, like to me, being masculine, being a man is about being a provider, being a leader, being a protector, being an example for future generations and for the younger generation. If we're going with this, in my opinion, outdated model of masculinity where it's like you got to be strong, you got to show no emotions, like, okay, what does that get us? It gets us like a bunch of people that are just like emotionally stunted where we're not able to fully convey the fullness of who we are, you know, like aggression, which is normally attributed to like masculinity. Like there's nothing wrong with being aggressive when it's being focused and directed and at the right things. But all this like aggression toward yourself because you're not able to express anything else, then it lashes out, and then the people around you and the people that you love get hurt. And then so like, what, then what?
Yeah, that made me think, like, what is the definition of masculinity? And I looked it up, and it's qualities or attributes regarded as characteristics of man. So really, even in that sense, it isn't really like a this is exactly what it is. I think masculinity is what we make of it, you know?
Yeah.
What is masculinity? I don't know what it is. I don't think I have a clear example of what I think it is. I think there are some things where we grew up and we see, like you see Fonzie from Happy Days. People are like, oh, that's a man right there. Is it?
Is it?
Is it just one example of a guy?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Everybody's definition of it isn't the same. It can't be the same.
You know, that's just one example of it. Like, it doesn't have to be one set thing. To try and pigeonhole it into that is just not conducive to growth. You know, to kind of go back to what you were saying about our previous generations of like, oh, well, I did it, so you have to do it this way. Like,
yeah,
it's one thing to learn from personal experience, but also like, shouldn't we as men, as masculine people, like, shouldn't we be trying to make it better for the next generations?
And in what way can we make it better? Because like in my head, when I'm thinking about that, I'm like, you know what? Is it my job to tell my kid what masculine means? I don't think it is. Everybody's definition of it is different. So maybe it's my duty to listen to the kid that I have eventually and say, okay, what do you feel being a man is? You give me your definition so I can follow suit and treat you the way that you believe it is. Because if I think it's one thing and you do something else, I'm going to judge you a certain way because that's not what I think masculine is, but you think it is. So like, who am I to tell you that you're wrong? You know?
Yeah. I mean, I think like we can do that by what you were saying, like listening to the younger generation. Everybody thinks that like, oh, you're younger, you don't know what you're talking about. Like, but the youth, they see the world through such a clear set of eyes that isn't tainted and poisoned by the world. Like, what kind of example do you want me to set? You know, there can be a nice middle ground of that and being like, all right, here we are.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's not your job to like teach them like what it is to be masculine. It's your duty to show them a good example of it. I'm non-binary and I kind of flip-flop around a lot with kind of my gender presentation.
Do you feel like you have to explain the way that you carry yourself and the things that you believe? Do you think you have to explain yourself a lot more nowadays? Because I feel like with terms, pronouns and everything, people are so over the moon about, oh, this is so confusing, or I don't want to have to do this, or you're this, or you're that, or you're this, you have to be this, you can't be anything else. Do you feel like you find yourself in these arguments more and more nowadays?
Yes, partially because A, I'm from a very conservative family, small town Missouri, like I'm one of two queer people or openly queer people in my family. I'm the first person to be non-binary, so like that's a whole conversation. I'm polyamorous, so that's a whole conversation. Like, I'm not religious in the regards that the rest of my family is, so like that's a whole conversation. And as the years go on, I just feel like I get stranger and stranger and weirder and weirder, and I'm getting into weird stuff. And like, I want my family to understand where I'm at. I don't necessarily need them to like agree with me or convert or anything like that. Like, it's, I just want you to understand, like, this is how I see the world. Even if that isn't something you agree with, I need you to at least like kind of follow my train of thought for a little bit so that you can have a better understanding of who I am.
Yeah. To what you just said, I feel stranger and weirder more and more. Is that based on your perspective, or is that what was projected onto you as teachings of what is right and what is wrong as a kid?
I feel a bit of both. I feel like I get weirder just because, like, you know, as our society changes, and I will be the first to admit, like, when I first heard about like non-binary and gender non-conforming stuff, I was weirded out by it. But the more I learned about it, the more I understood about it, the more I was like, oh, this is actually very, very resonant with who I am and how I perceive myself and how I want to be perceived in the world. So it's a little bit of that while also going against ways that I was brought up in the world.
And like when you say weird, because I feel like just talking about this, I'm seeing you go back to that as the base, like weird. Is it good or bad when you say weird? Like, some people are like, I'm good weird. It sounds like you're almost like, this is bad weird, right?
I would say it's good weird, you know? Yeah, the way I was saying it was probably like a bad weird. And that's me kind of taking on
the
projections and the judgments of the people around me. For me, like, it's so liberating to be weird. I like, I honestly don't give a shit if you don't like me, if you don't like who I am, if you don't like the way I live my life. Like, cool, whatever. I'm still going to do it because it makes me happy and it makes me feel free. It makes me, I don't know, man. Like, it makes me feel fuller in myself. So
true story. We are in Kansas City, Missouri for my bachelor party. Me, my homie Jones, best man Bates, and Garrett. Just finished up dinner at the famous Jack Stack Barbecue. Everything was bomb, and we decided to take a walk to a near bar. Had the rest of the guys that were in town meet us there. We walked into the spot. It was a cool spot. Had a dance floor on the first level, and there was a DJ, and then we had a patio on the top level. So we had a couple drinks, noticed the DJ had started playing songs. In about 10 minutes, no one was on the floor, but there was one person on the floor. Actually, it was Garrett. After one person joined, another person joined, three people, next thing you know, the entire bar is popping. Garrett single-handedly turned on the party. That's the kind of person Garrett is. I love everything about Garrett. His energy is fantastic. He treats people like they're family. And the conversations we had today were just so inspiring. And we actually jumped on another topic about hair. And this is what Garrett said.
For most of my life, I've had pretty short hair. This is the longest my hair's ever been. As I've learned more about how hair is treated in a lot of cultures and how it's actually like a sign of growth of who you are as a person, you know, regardless of how short, long, whatever you keep it, how you style it, whatever, it is still an extension and an expression of you. I enjoy having long hair. I feel like it is very much a outward representation of my mental state now.
I started noticing people that I admired growing out their locks and growing out their hair more. And, you know, history, they used to say dreadlocks because the colonizers and the white people did not like the locks. They thought they were dreadful. So they called them dreadlocks. And they were like, these are horrible. Them dreadlocks are gross. And that's what they would call them, dreadlocks. And it's more of a representation of my culture, of who I am as a person. And I should be able to wear my hair naturally in any setting the way I wanted to. So a lot of these people that I admire, like Jay-Z, the idea, he's a billionaire that when you see a picture of him is not some clean cut black dude in a suit. It's a black dude with tie unbuttoned, locks in his hair. And he's like, this is what a black billionaire could look like and can look like and should look like if he wants to. Any person should look this way. And that's why when I had my locks, I really wanted to have that illustration that, hey, I am not stupid from having my hair like this. I am not less than anyone else because my hair is like this. I could be just as professional with my hair like this as I am with a cut. Now, granted, it's wave season now. I'm okay with it. But also, if I have my locks, you shouldn't look at me any different than when I have my fade. So I totally agree with you. That is another element of what we've been talking about. Somebody in the older generation could see you and be like, oh, yep. Why do you got your hair cut like a girl? Why, like Sunshine from Remember the Titans. His hair was long. He was feminine. And it's like, why? Why is that feminine? Who told you that long hair was feminine? You did. Is a woman masculine because her hair was short? No. She's still a woman and you still look at her as a feminine person.
We can trace all of these problems, obstacles, non-growth conducive mindsets. We can trace it all back to colonialism. We can all trace it back to this negative mindset of there's one set standard and that's what we have to be. And it's fucked up.
Oh, hey there. Dom Lamour here. I appreciate you so much for listening to this podcast. Do you know that I also make music? Oh, you haven't heard it? Well, here it is.
You said, I love you, boy.
Check me out on all streaming platforms, and also you can go directly to domlamour.com and get anything and everything Dom Lamour. You talked about how you wanted males to embrace the more feminine aspects and attributes that we all share. And you said that by doing so, it can not only give you a deeper understanding of yourself, but also can make you a better partner. Explain that.
We have this image of the strong man that doesn't express emotions. Emotions are part of who we are. Okay, I don't understand why we attribute being emotional to femininity. I don't understand that. Emotions are part of who we are as humans, as male, female, non-binary, whatever the fuck. Like, emotions are intrinsically part of who we are. And so to try and deny that and try and like cover that up is just covering up a part of yourself and hiding that away. And if you're hiding that away, I feel like you're not being honest with yourself. And if you're not being honest with yourself, how can you be fully honest with your partner? How can you feel comfortable enough with somebody to share that part of yourself if you're not comfortable enough to share that with yourself? There's nothing wrong with being sensitive. There's nothing wrong with being like, you know what? That hurt my feelings. And here's why that hurt my feelings. Being able to properly communicate and convey our emotions is such a powerful technique in just being good communicators. Whether it's in a relationship, whether it's in like just a workship or just like a friendship, whatever. Like, if you can't properly put what you're feeling into words or express it in some way, how do you expect that feeling to be heard and reciprocated or helped with or dealt with? You know, like you can't.
Like, okay, what's the definition? So going to the feminine side, it's the same thing. Having qualities or an appearance traditionally associated with women. So first thing you brought up was sensitivity. But in my head, it's like with these very broad definitions of these two words, it really, there isn't really anything in there that says feminine is sensitive.
Exactly.
And masculine is, you know, bro. Like, it doesn't give you any definition. Nothing in a definition says that one is for the other and the other is not for the other. So once again, it goes back to the drawing board of what is your definition of feminine that males should embrace. Like, maybe this isn't part of that. Maybe having sensitivity is a part of being masculine. You know, maybe being more open with yourself is a healthy version of being masculine, but instead we don't associate it with that because this is what was projected on us. That's crazy, right? When you read those definitions out loud and we're having this discussion about the way people are treated, about the things that other people say are masculine and other people say are feminine, it really opens your eyes to the idea of what is it? What do I feel makes me masculine? What makes me feminine? And is it because I feel that or it's because I heard that from somewhere else?
That right there.
And that's what other people think. So that's what I have to think. How do you break down the walls to the traumatic projections that were thrown at you from the worst people in the world? Like, yeah, a lot of the people that we get this stuff from are not great role models when it comes to it. Some are. Some people are great people who just, they have their own ways that they grew up, and that's the way they associate certain things in their head. But also, there are some horrible people. Great example. I'm single with a wedding band now. And so we went to Birmingham to do a wedding last weekend, and we went to the Cracker Barrel. So I sat down and I was telling them about how when I was younger, I didn't think the Cracker Barrel was somewhere Black people could go. And they were like, why? And I was like, well, as a kid, my uncle loved Chris Rock. Chris Rock was like the thing. Like, he had his big Bring the Pain comedy special. And he has this joke where he's like, cracker ass cracker, cracker ass cracker. Like, he said cracker a lot. So my uncle will say cracker all the time around the house. And it was like how he referred to white people. So in my child mind, I'm driving on the interstate someday and I see Cracker Barrel and I think, huh, I guess that's just for white people, because in history class, I was told that there are restaurants that Black people can go to and white people can go to.
I mean,
maybe that's one of the white people restaurants.
You're not wrong, though.
The Cracker Barrel. But that's a child way of looking at it. Things that were projected on me by a horrible role model led to a very miseducated prediction of something that you even said. It makes sense when you think about all the stuff that I went through. But it was a horrible role model who shouldn't have been saying that stuff around a seven-year-old. I could have gone to school and been like, you cracker, you cracker, you cracker. I could have totally done that. I didn't do that, luckily, because I was that weird kid who I saw the things that my cousins and my uncles and people in my life were doing. And if they were bad things, I don't know how, but as a child, I recognized, oh, that's bad. I shouldn't be doing that. That's why it took me so long to smoke weed for the first time. I didn't smoke weed until I was living in LA and I was like,
yeah,
this can make me go to sleep. This is medicine. How dare no one tell me this? I had no idea. But as a kid, you know, you grow up around people rolling up baggies and going to jail constantly and getting in trouble all the time. And you're like, oh, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be in trouble. I don't like being in trouble. So I'm not going to do that. But he would say stuff like cracker and I'd be like, maybe that's right.
God.
My Uncle Harold would always be like, you got to get you a main chick and get you a side chick. Couple of side chicks. Have a couple of side chicks. And as a kid, I'm hearing this thinking, no, you're wrong. You're wrong. But then other people were like, no, you should have fun as a kid. You should have fun. That's what they told me. And I'm like, does that mean he's right? This person that's always wrong, that does horrible things, is right? And I grew up, and you know right from wrong the older you get when you meet people.
Yeah.
But then again, this is the person that was influencing me as a child. I didn't have someone talking to me about love. I didn't want to talk to my mama about it because she's my mama. Ew, you know? So when I start dating my first girlfriend in high school, I think, oh, well, he said have side chicks. No, that's bad. Well, if she doesn't know about it, and it's something that, like, subconsciously, I should have known better. I still know to this day I should have known better. But that was in my ear. And even going to high school, it was something that I heard that I was told, have fun till you get married. And it took going through that experience for me to be like, those people still influence me, even though I don't want them to, even though I know they're horrible. Years after I should know better, they still influence me. So I'm to this point now where I'm constantly redefining certain things of my life.
And honestly, I think that's like, that's an ongoing thing though. You're never going to be perfect. You're never going to be 100% healed. You're never going to know everything there is to know. You know, I'm a student of life. I'm never going to stop learning. I'm never going to stop growing. Our understanding of terms, our understanding of people is in that same regard of just like, we as humans are constantly evolving and like our society is constantly evolving. There is no end point.
Love languages. I'm fascinated by the love languages by Gary Chapman. Fantastic book. I actually read the book before I met my wife. I feel like it's really important for everyone to read that book. That you might go to work and your friend Betty brings cookies every day, but no one ever gives her anything. So she seems miserable. She's almost as if she doesn't feel the love. And it's because her love language is gifts and no one gives her gifts. Everybody else's love language is something else, like words of affirmation. So they're like, you're fantastic. You're great. And she's like, I don't want that. I want more cookies. And no one understands that because they aren't paying attention to the way that she communicates her love and her good grace to everybody as well. It's great for people to communicate. And I believe the love languages are just extremely helpful. I lead by example. I do something. I expect you to do that. And that shows my love language is actions. I need to do things. I do things so you can see, look what I'm doing for you. And I feel like people should do that for me too. And it's like, everyone aren't the same. And reading that book helped me understand.
I would definitely say that, like, in terms of giving my love, I'm very much acts of service and quality time. Those are my big two there. You know, if I can help make your day a little easier, if I can help make your day just a little less stressful, anything to just take the load off for you, boom, I got it. I'm on it. And also just love spending time with my loved ones. Just getting to hang out. I don't care if we're just chilling on the couch, listening to music, watching a movie, whatever. Just spending time. But then on the receiving end, I love words of affirmation and I love quality time. You know, those two things make me feel valued. I feel like that's a very strong distinction within the love languages that sometimes gets overlooked of like, you know, what is your sending out love language and what is your taking in love language?
Yeah. See, and I'm lucky because like mine are the same both ways. A lot of people aren't like that. Like actions and personal touch. Those are my two. You think about that, you could grow old to a place where you just ignore certain things that you need. That really jumps off the page when I think about how impactful that book was for me. I feel like every conversation I end up having with someone, at some point that conversation comes to the love language. It's like, have you ever read this book? Here it is. You should take my copy. And Gary Chapman has a couple of good books all the way through. I read that one. Also, All the Things You Need to Know Before You Get Married was a great book he wrote as well. All right. Well, hey, this has been a fantastic conversation. The way I like to end this, we've had our talk. We've enjoyed each other's time. How do you feel?
I hope that I was able to convey my ideas in a educational and conducive manner. And like, I might have slipped up on shit. And if I did, like, listeners, by all means, call me out. You can find me on Instagram. You can, whatever. I don't care. Like, because at the end of the day, if I fucked up, I want to learn from that fuck up so I can A, not do it again. B, be a better person by learning from that. I think that's how I'm feeling right now.
Cheers to you, man.
Cheers.
I want to thank you for listening to the Black Man Talking Emotions podcast. The opening quote credit goes to Natalie Brenner. And shout out to Garrett for being a part of the pod. Follow Garrett at g.g.w.dance on Instagram. Please subscribe to the podcast and give us a good rating. 5 stars, please. And thank you. Also, tell me your stories about these subjects at dom_AMOUR on Instagram or at domlamour.com. I'm Dom Lamour. Much love.